Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of a Pen and a Napkin podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to our interview series, episode number 219. And we are really excited to have on Lucas Dollinghouse, the head boys basketball coach at Johnson Brock here in the state of Nebraska. Excited to have Coach on. And he is one of the more interesting spots. He's out in Kearney right now. He's driving the bus. It's FBLA, isn't it, Coach?
Yep, that's right.
All right. So Coach has taken some time here to chat with us. But before we get to Coach Dollinghouse, we, of course, want to recognize our founding sponsor, Cosac Chiropractic, located at 144th and Maple here in Omaha. Coaches, if you or any of your athletes are struggling with balanced neck or spinal issues, have them go see Dr. Kevin, Dr. Heidi. Follow us on a pen and a napkin on Twitter there, or X, or whatever you want to call it, at a pen and a napkin. We try to put out daily coaching tidbits on the Twitter handle, so be sure to follow us there. If you're listening, download, rate, review, go to iTunes, go to Spotify, give us 5 stars, say nice things, because when people look up coaching basketball podcasts, if there's more reviews and more good things, then a pen and a napkin goes to closer to the top of the list. So be sure to do that if you would be willing to do so. If you have any questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me at penandanapkin@gmail.com. Go check out penandanapkin.com. It's a really, really good coaching website. I feel that way because I'm the one that made it, so I'm a little bit biased, but go check it out there, coaches, if you're looking for some stuff to possibly help you out. I try to put on a lot of stuff. Added a couple of things here in the last week or two, so go check that out. Coach Dollinghouse, how was the trip from Johnson Brock to Kearney, Nebraska today?
Well, a little windy on the bus, yeah. But, it was good. Kids were great. I think they were a little tired this morning, but it was a good drive. Get out here closer to central Nebraska, and it's been a good day so far.
Good to hear. Just a one-night overnighter there?
I think we'll be here till Saturday, so okay. Probably two nights, 3 days. So okay. It'll be good. Good for the kids.
So. Yeah, so is it competition-based, or is it just a bunch of meetings and workshops? What do you got going on? I'm kind of curious.
Yeah, they had an opening session today, and the kids are going to be competing really, I think, till 9 tonight, and then all day Friday they'll compete, and then I think Saturday is an award ceremony. So as a former business teacher and FBLA sponsor in Kansas, this has brought back a lot of memories for when I was able to go. So it was nice to drive the bus and help sponsor these kids.
Ah, so you're back right in the wheelhouse, ready to roll with that. So that's yeah. Good, man.
Yeah, it's great. I've enjoyed it so far.
Awesome. All right. Well, hey, let's dive into it here. We've talked enough FBLA. No offense to the FBLA, but Lucas, tell us a little bit about yourself for folks that aren't familiar with you. They're not familiar with your basketball journey. Coach, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you ended up at Johnson Brock High School.
Well, it all really started on a dairy farm in northeast Kansas. That's where I grew up, tiny town of Baylorville, which is about the size of Johnson. Uh-huh. But, you know, it'd be probably right on that class D1, D2 line every year. But I grew up there and, you know, loved basketball at a young age. I've got two younger brothers, and my middle brother and I, we used to play hoops down in our basement a lot with those little portable hoops. I had a cousin who was at a neighboring conference school who was a really good basketball player. He ended up playing for Washburn University, and I was just always in awe of watching him play. And so I really got excited. At that point, we didn't really play any organized basketball till 5th and 6th grade. And so that was really my next taste of competitive basketball. And then kind of moving on to junior high, I really didn't play a lot. A lot of that was probably my own doing. I thought, well, I've got this cousin who's pretty good. I should be pretty good because we have the same genetics, but you know, it just doesn't work that way. And so I probably didn't put in the time that I, you know, was necessary. You know, I'd go out to the driveway and shoot hoops and things, but just that time in the gym, didn't do a lot of that. So we had a real competitive class a year above me and a year behind me. And so in my class, we didn't play much. And so in junior high, I maybe averaged like 30 seconds a game in the A team. And, you know, I got discouraged, but still kept trying. And freshman year, we were able to play kind of our own freshman team, and we went 5-4. You know, just nine of us. We felt pretty good. And then you get into your sophomore year and your JV and not playing much. So I actually gave it up after my sophomore year and, you know, took on other things. I actually got a job working at a cabinet factory after school. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of got away from sports. I didn't go out for football my junior and senior year, didn't do any track or anything like that. And I always knew that I wanted to be a teacher and then a principal and then a superintendent. Mm-hmm. And coaching never really entered into any of that. Went to college at K-State and became a business teacher. And I taught at Manhattan High School for I was a December grad, so I had a spring semester where they hired me as a business teacher. And over Christmas break, like right after graduation, I had this Manhattan job lined up, but over Christmas break, a job came open at Bern High School in Bern, Kansas, which is where my cousin had gone to school, and that's actually where my mom had graduated from. And it was back home, and I applied, and I got the job right away. So I hadn't even started my first day at Manhattan yet, but I already had a different job for the next year. And mm-hmm. it was just interesting how that worked out. Throughout the spring, I was communicating with the principal at the time, and he said, "Hey, we've got all these supplemental openings, you know, yearbook, junior high coaching." And then he said, "We have head girls basketball." And I'm like, "Well, I'd be interested in that." Well, as a first year teacher, they didn't want to put me in that, which mm-hmm. was understandable.
Yeah.
And so I ended up settling for assistant boys basketball at Bern. And I was able to work under another young coach named Curtis Gooch. And, you know, that first year we went 5-15, I believe. And then he had an opportunity to go on to his wife's hometown. And so the head boys job opened. And I was interested in that, of course, but I had no collegiate experience. I hadn't played in high school. There was a lot of hesitation for me to take over that job. But I was persistent. I kept after it, said, you know, I'd really be interested. I don't know why, but I just, hey, I'll throw my name in. And so I think they were hoping that maybe somebody would pop up, but nobody did. And so in October, I was hired as the boys head coach. And I had a great assistant coach, John Trail. He had been like a 40-year teacher veteran.
Wow.
And he taught me a lot. And that was kind of a mentor for me because I was this young 22-year-old kid as a head boys basketball coach. And that first year at Bern, I think we started like 0-11. We ended up 2-19 that year. And it was a great learning experience, a humbling experience for me as a coach. We came back the next year and we beat our arch rival the first game of the season, I believe. And we ended up, I think we were 6-14 going into our sub-district or district tournament. And in the district final, we ended up beating the number one seed. They were 16-5. And made the state tournament as a 9-14 team, which was just crazy for these kids. And we made that state tournament. And Bern, in a small school, we ended up losing that first round to the eventual state champ. But Bern was a small school. They were talking about potentially closing it. And there was a possibility of it only having 1 year left. And so, you know, I've got a young family at that time. Worried about what the future is going to hold. And an opening came up at the other high school in the district, Axtell High School. And so I was offered that job as a business teacher and the head boys basketball coach. And so I hem-hauled around on that decision. I hated to leave these Bern kids because we had everybody coming back off of a state tournament team. They were just great kids. And I decided I had to do this for my family. And so probably the hardest thing I ever did was I told those kids, hey, I'm leaving. I'm going to your arch rival to teach. And oh, by the way, I'm going to be the head boys basketball coach. And we're probably going to play each other next year. And that was very, very tough. Uh-huh. And so I go to Axtell. We ended up 5-15 that year. We actually had lost to Burn three times. They ended up going 12-12. We get to the district or the sub-district again. We're in the semifinals. We lose that game. And, you know, we finished 5-15 and the kids are all upset in the locker room. And I said, you know, guys, if you don't want this to happen again, we really need to get to work in the summer. Yeah. And we did that. And the next year we go 19-8 and win the state title. We beat a team that was 25-0 in the state championship game, and the kids really just bought in. And so, I'm returning pretty much everybody the next year. We end up going 14-10, and we lost in a district final game on a last second shot. And then the next year we come back and make the state tournament, lose in the first round. And at that point there was talk of possibly Axel closing, low enrollment. There were some consolidations happening. And I told my wife, I said, I'm just tired of this talk of school finance in Kansas just isn't great. Mm-hmm. You know, let's look to Nebraska. And she was a Pawnee City grad. And okay. So she was familiar. And so Johnson Brock came open, and I applied for the principal job and I got it, and I was done coaching. I thought that was it for me. My first year at Johnson Brock as the principal, you know, I was just kind of on the sidelines, monitoring things, doing administrative duties. And my twins really, I could tell they really missed the game. And yeah. So the next year when the assistant coaching job opened up, I put my name in for that. I was fortunate to get that. And then Nick Craig, who was the coach at the time, he ended up leaving in August. And so we were in a situation where we needed a coach. And there I was. I had the opportunity to move up. And, you know, I've been the head coach at Johnson Brock since. So just completed eighth year there. And yeah. It's been a nice run.
Awesome. You also are pretty accomplished. Like I said, you're the principal at Johnson Brock. I thought it was interesting. You've got a doctorate in educational leadership that you just, I assume you're all wrapped up with that, right, Coach?
Yep. Finished that last May.
All right. So you're talking educational leadership, leadership in general. And sometimes, the lessons of the classroom have a direct, you could take a lot of that and cross it over into real life. Sometimes there's stuff that you learn in the classroom that has nothing to do with your day-to-day stuff, but just kind of out of curiosity more than anything else, what are some things that you took from working on your doctoral thesis and all the classes that you went through? How is that maybe transferred into your coaching style, some of the things that you've learned that you've applied to your coaching out on the floor or within your program anywhere?
Well, the biggest thing for me is the work ethic of, you know, it takes a lot of hard work for good things to happen. And you really have to have that great work ethic. And I'll go back to those lessons that I learned on the dairy farm. I can remember one of my favorite stories from, you know, working as a youth. We would go out and we'd clean the milk barn probably once a month. And I mean, really deep clean it.
Yeah.
And I can remember I was probably 10 or 11 years old. I don't, maybe a little younger, who knows, but we were down there cleaning, my brother and I, and my dad said, hey, here's where the soap is. Here's where everything that you need, whatever, it's right here. I'll be down to check on you guys after a bit. So, you know, of course it's hard to meet the expectations sometimes of, you know, your parents, like it's gotta be perfectly clean. And so he comes down to inspect and he's like, you know what, you guys, you need some more elbow grease on these walls. And I'm like, Dad, I'm already using all the chemicals and everything else you told me. We don't have any elbow grease. And he just started laughing. And he's like, no, elbow grease, you know, that work ethic that you have to have. Sometimes if you really want something, you've got to scrub a little bit harder. And so that really, you know, ingrained in my mind that you really have to work hard. This doctorate was one of the hardest things I ever did in my life. Because it took a lot of time and there was a lot of research and all of that. And I just think, you know, what a lot of people don't understand, you know, they see maybe, oh, you know, you won the state title because you've got great players or whatever, but people don't always understand the hard work that went into that. And, you know, with this year, well, really the last 2 years with our state title teams, those kids have lived in the gym. And it wasn't just a one day here or there. It's nearly every day. And so I just think, you know, if you want to be successful in life and in anything that you do, you have to work really, really hard. You have to outwork everybody else. And I guess that's kind of been my mantra, you know, whether it be driving the bus or whether it be mowing the lawn or whatever it is you do, you want to outwork everybody else and just do the best that you can do so that you can be successful.
Mm-hmm. You're also now and have been for a while an administrator, a principal. Does that, I mean, in what way, it has to in some ways affect your viewpoint as a coach. It's and you're at a smaller school. That's not going to happen at a class A type of school or whatever. You know, it's you know, you've got to find ways to make things work. And obviously you've done both jobs very admirably. But I imagine there's a little bit of a different perspective that you have as principal. Is it make your job easier at times? Does it make your job as a coach harder at times? I'm guessing probably a little bit of both, but Lucas, I'll let you handle that question.
Yeah, I would say a little bit of both. You know, when I came to Johnson Brock, I was just the principal to start with. And it was very difficult for me to connect with the kids. I like to joke around with the kids. I like to build that relationship with the kids. And when you are the principal, you're known as the disciplinarian. I mean, we can go back years upon years. Everybody says, oh, you don't want to go to the principal's office. You know, the principal's the bad guy. And I hate that. I hate that. Now, there's a time for that where, yeah, the principal has to be the bad guy and things like that. But that first year at Johnson Brock, it was so hard for me to navigate that. You know, both Byrne and Axel. And at Axel, I had been a teacher for 2 years, and then I was a teacher assistant principal for a year, and then I became the principal for a year. And it was a lot easier because those kids had seen me as a teacher, but they had that respect, you know, as I moved up to principal. Johnson Brock, the kids only saw me as the principal. And so I was very happy to have the opportunity to get back into coaching, to build those relationships with those kids. You know, the principal job is so interesting. It's so unique. You know, I think at sometimes it's made my job as a coach easier. Mm-hmm. You know, but it sometimes, I don't know, it's hard to really quantify that. That's an interesting question. But I guess part of me is it's really my reality and all I've ever known, you know, for the last 9 years or so. It's an interesting dynamic for sure.
Yeah, well, it's unique. But again, you're at a smaller school, and so those lines are a little bit different, especially in modern education, because it is harder to find coaches. You know, it just is. It's hard to find people to fill in roles in education, period. And so you do have to step in and do some things that maybe would not be quote unquote normal, in a certain situation, because that's what you have to do. I mean, you know, that's gotta be part of it as well, you know?
Yeah. And I think the kids buy into more of what you're saying because they understand that you're going to back it up with what you do. Like they see the work that you're putting in. They, you know, as a principal, you're spending a lot of long hours just as teachers are. But when the kids see that, I think they're more willing to buy in and put in the long hours themselves because of that leading by example, I guess is what I would say.
Yep. Coaches, get signed up today for the 4th annual A Pen and a Napkin Coaches Clinic. This year's clinic will take place on Saturday, April 27th at the AEF Basketball Academy facility located at South 99th Circle and Portal Road in La Vista, Nebraska. We've got a great lineup of speakers, starting out with 3 on-court demonstrations. Justin Carter, former Creighton basketball player and owner and opera and founder of ProVision Basketball here in Omaha. He's going to do some essential skills and drills for player development. Dave Hubert, the head girls basketball coach at Ashland Greenwood High School, is going to do defensive principles and drills. Mark Sfigera, the head men's basketball coach at my alma mater, the Harvard of the Heartland, Briarcliff University. Great offensive mind, and he's going to talk about offensive basketball. One of the great things that we do at a Pen and a Napkin Clinic is we have our classroom sessions during our lunches. We've got 3 great speakers to come in this year to talk during our lunches. Jim Simons, the head boys basketball coach at Omaha Westside, is going to talk about using the three-point shot. Andy Gerlez, my good friend G, going to talk about building a program foundation and practice principles from Papillion La Vista South. And Tyler Bird, the Think Shrink, you heard him on the podcast a few weeks ago. He's going to talk about mental health for coaching and keeping balance in your coaching life. And then we're going to have two breakout sessions. That's probably the thing that makes a pen and a napkin clinic the most unique thing, is you're going to sit around and you're going to talk with random coaches about random topics and pick the brains of random coaches that are going to be there for the clinic. Along with that, once the clinic is done, perhaps the best part of the clinic, I don't know, there's a lot of good things about the clinic, is our post-clinic social. And that's going to be at Wine 121, located at 120th and Center here in Omaha. Just $15 per coach if you want to attend that. Again, it's all about the coaches, and I try to keep it really, really affordable. This year, for one coach, for over 7 hours worth of stuff, $50. That's about $7 an hour to get great information. Two coaches from a staff, $90 or $45 a piece. Three coaches from the same staff, $120, so $40 a piece. If you have four or more coaches from your staff, that's $35. That's $5 an hour that you're going to pay for your whole staff to have a great day of knowledge and learning things. So if you're interested in signing up for the clinic, look for our flyer on Twitter, or you can email me, a pen and a napkin at gmail.com. You can DM me on Twitter. Registrations are due Thursday, April 25th. Have to do that for the lunch count and make sure that we're taken care of there. But coaches, you will not regret signing up for the fourth annual A Pen and a Napkin Coaches Clinic. Do that today. Coach, let's talk a little bit about Johnson Brock. Let's talk about your run there. Your first state championship there, you've won three, correct?
Correct.
Yep. Three at Johnson Brock. Your first one comes in 2019, on the heels of a football state championship. So you guys got the rare sweep, the football basketball, sweep, which means, you had some really, really good athletes to coach and some really dedicated kids, you know, so forth and so on down the line. You know, talk to us a little bit about that team, what made that group of kids unique, and just put you and the football coach in such a good place to have such an opportunity to have such a high level of success.
Yeah, you know, the kids bought into what we wanted them to do, plain and simple. We had some talented basketball players at that time that, again, had put in a ton of work throughout the years. You know, they had a very competitive football season, which ended in that state title. And so we had a really late start to the basketball season. I think we played a jamboree like within a couple days after the title game, football title game. But, you know, the kids, they were just competitors, and they were a great group to be around. You know, really the seeds of that were planted probably 2 years prior in with the 17 team, because that was a team that had a lot of talent, and we just missed out on a state tournament. And I think just missing out on that motivated a lot of these kids because they saw that or were part of that. And they knew that we had the potential to really take the next step. But, you know, we need to get better at some of those fundamental things. And so the kids bought in, I know, that summer. They did a lot of tournaments. I think we had a couple parents that led some summer tournaments as well and helped out there. But, you know, just the kids just bought into what we wanted to do. And we had a good run. I think in that 19 team, we might have started off 12-0, and then we get to Mudeikis and we lose in the semifinals. And sometimes you need a game like that to kind of bring you back to reality. Like, yeah, we've got some things we need to work on.
Keep the edge a little bit. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that that was a good wake up call for our kids. And, you know, we used to joke, you know, those first 3 or 4 years, we were the king of third place games because it seems like we could never get past the semifinals. And that team was finally able to break through. We played Sacred Heart in the semifinals at state, and they had beaten us three times already earlier in the year. And, you know, we had a close game. We ended up pulling it out by three. And then whenever we get to the state title game, we had enough momentum that we were just able to push through. But those kids, they were just simply competitors. They just had a will to win. And, you know, we had a lot of good players that year.
Well, and nothing is, I played in one third place game, and that was one too many. That's the, yeah. That's the hardest thing to do as a coach. Or I don't want to say the hardest thing, but it's not fun. It's not fun at all.
No,
so
not at all.
So you've had a heck of a run here the last couple of years, back-to-back state championships, and we'll get to that in a second. But like we just mentioned, as fate would have it, that sometimes losing is okay. Sometimes losing is good. Sometimes losing is beneficial to help you with in a variety of different ways. And for these, for the last couple of years here, your run has been in some ways spurred on by a loss that you had in the 22 district final to Dundee County Stratton, and you fell short of the state tournament. You know, how have you been able to turn what had to be a heartbreaking loss at the time into such a positive run here the last couple of years?
Yeah, that Dundee County loss, that was heartbreaking. But we actually had a more heartbreaking loss the game before. We were the actual one seed going into our sub-district, and we lost to HTRS, and they may have even been below 500. And that was a devastating loss for our kids, and so we didn't even know if we would make a district final. And we got lucky. PowerPoints worked out for us, and we were able to play Dundee County. And we thought we had a pretty good chance to win that game. We had the lead at halftime. We just couldn't, you know, finish the job. We had some costly turnovers at the end, and then we couldn't hit a shot in the second half. But again, we were in a locker room after that game, and I laid it on the line to the kids that were returning that, hey, you know, if you want to get back to that state tournament, we have got to put in the work. And that's exactly what the kids did. They bought into it. They came in that summer. We played a lot of basketball. And, you know, it just paid off going into last year where we were able to win the state tournament then. But it all comes back to, you know, being devastated and having that feeling that, man, you don't want to feel that again, but what can you do to make yourself better to put yourself in that position of success? And I'll give the kids a lot of credit. They bought into what we were saying. And the best thing for a coach is when you're saying that stuff, you want to make sure that the kids have success so that they know that what you're talking about is true. You don't want them to put in all the work and then they don't reap the rewards of that. And so that's what's been a big benefit for us the last 2 years as well.
So what are some ways? I mean, you said, you know, you got to put into the work. Was it something that was just said once, or was it something that maybe was repeated on a consistent basis? I mean, you know, a lot of people could say, okay, we fell short. We need to turn this around and make it a positive. What are some ways that you and your staff did that, not only just immediately after that game, but over the next, you know, basically throughout the spring and the summer afterwards?
We got the kids in the gym. There was really no excuse. And the kids, you know, I asked them, you know, what do you want to play? And I've got to give, you know, this group has been great because they want to play the game of basketball. And you don't always have a whole bunch of kids that want to do that. Sometimes you'll maybe have three or four that are, oh, yeah, basketball is my favorite sport. That's what I want to play. I'll get in the gym. What I've had the fortunate opportunity to coach with this group is, you know, I've got like 15 or 20 guys that want to get in the gym and get better. And so whenever you have that many guys, the competition level, you know, it rises a little bit. You know, when we were at a really small school at Bern, I had 11 kids out for basketball. Mm-hmm. Well, you do the math, I could put 12 on varsity. All 11 kids are going to make varsity. And so who's pushing for those spots? Whenever I've got 27 kids out right now and I can only have 14 varsity spots, you've got some good competition happening. And so coming out of Dundee County loss, and we're talking, you know, we need to get in the gym. We need to get better fundamentally, you know, taking care of the ball. So we're going to do some dribbling drills. We're going to do passing drills. We're going to do shooting drills. We're going to do stuff like that. But then we're going to go play some games as well. And so through team camps, MAYB tournaments, those AAU tournaments, whatever, we're going to go do a lot of that stuff in June and July just to get used to playing at this competition level. And that's really what it came down to. These kids played more and more basketball. The more and more basketball they played, the more comfortable they got, and it paid off for them.
Mm-hmm. You win it in 23. You know, made a nice run, dropped, you know, and you really got a roll on a roll at the end of the season there. And then you ran the table this past season. Now, repeating is always difficult, but to repeat and to go undefeated while repeating, again, kind of the blessing and the curse. I imagine there was a lot of pressure to repeat, but at the same time, you started winning and winning and winning, and you're going undefeated, and that kind of cranks it up. How did you coach this particular group of kids to try and minimize the pressure of not only repeating, but then as you strung together win after win after win, not let the pressure of being undefeated also get to them as well?
Yeah, it was a very interesting season because I told the boys at the very beginning of the year, I said, there's no worse feeling in the world than watching another team cut down the nets that you should be cutting down. And, you know, in Axel in 13, you know, we won the state title and we come back the next year and we lose in that district final on a last second shot. That was devastating. I think we cried in the locker room for like 45 minutes afterwards because it was so hard. In 19, we come back after winning that one, come back in 20, and we play Sacred Heart in the first round of state. And we end up losing. We led the whole game. We end up losing by 5 at the end. That was devastating. Sacred Heart goes on and wins the state title. So it's almost like, oh, there's another missed opportunity. So in 23, when we won, you know, I told the kids, like I said, you don't want to see somebody else cut down the nets. And I think the kids were just motivated just to go out and win. You know, a lot of people talk about the pressure of being undefeated and as you win games, the pressure built. I don't think these kids ever felt that pressure. And I can't say I really felt the pressure of being undefeated either. I think throughout the season, we thought, you know, a loss maybe wouldn't be bad, you know, like we talked about. But it never really came close to that. Tri-County, you know, we went to overtime in our conference championship game. And that was really the closest thing we had to a loss. And even though we won that game, it still kind of felt like a loss. It was just so weird because it's like, all right, if you don't win games, then it's like, well, man, we need to win some games. And then you start winning some games and it's like, well, you should be winning more games. And then you win a whole bunch of games and it's like, well, we should be winning by more than what we're winning by. Yeah. And so it's like, there's always that satisfaction level. Like, why are we never satisfied? And so, you know, I don't think there was really a pressure. It was more like, okay, we want to make sure that we play better than we did the game before. And, you know, we just strung one game at a time together.
Yeah.
One game at a time. And then by the time we get to the sub-district, we're like, okay, well, now we can't afford a loss. Like, we don't want to lose now. Like this, you know, now we got to win them all. And so, it was just an interesting, but this is an interesting group. They don't get too high or too low. They're very calm, very level-headed. And they just go out and play.
Uh-huh. How satisfying was it? Not only to do this, but to have your sons be part of it.
That was great. And really, all these kids have felt like they've been my kids. You know, we moved here. My boys were going into third grade. And I can remember, you know, they left a class at Axtell that since then, I mean, very competitive class. That Axtell group has won 3 straight 8-man football state championships the past 3 years. So that's how competitive that class that they left was. And so when we came to Johnson Brock, they were devastated. They were upset with me. Dad, why are we moving? Like, mm-hmm. We want to be with our friends and all that. And it didn't take long. We got them in baseball that first summer, and it didn't take long for the kids to develop new relationships with these kids. And you know, we started our JBAC youth basketball at third grade level, and the kids played ball there. And then we started our own little extreme club team the year after. And so these kids have just been playing forever together. And so they've all felt like my kids. But, you know, to do it with the twins, I've told people, for all the work that we've put in, for everything that we've done, through all the competitions, everything, it'd be nice to win one state title with the boys. Mm-hmm. And to be able to win two, it's just unreal. We're just so blessed to have that opportunity.
Yeah. Coaches, you know just as well as I do that we're always looking for new and different ways to motivate our players and programs. But sometimes it's hard to find that perfect source that we're looking for. Over the past 25 years, I've collected hundreds of handouts to help motivate my players and programs. And now I'd like to share some of my favorites with you. The A Pen and a Napkin 101 Best Handouts booklet is now available to you for only $15. In this booklet, you'll find motivational material for all types of situations and individuals to help you communicate your values to your players and program. For ordering information, you can either DM me on Twitter or email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com for details. Well, Coach, let's switch gears here a little bit. Let's get into the basketball nerd world here a little bit more than we already are. We're going to shift gears here with our John Wooden quote of the day. So, Coach Dollinghouse, are you ready for the John Wooden quote of the day, my friend?
Sure. Let's
do it. All right. From page 5. I think this is the earliest I've ever gone in the book. Wooden, A Lifetime of Observations. From page 5 of Wooden, A Lifetime of Observations, here is our John Wooden quote of the day. Being a role model is the most powerful form of educating. Youngsters need good models more than they need critics. It's one of a parent's or coach's greatest responsibilities and opportunities.
Yeah.
What do you got for us, Lucas?
Well, that's deep.
Yeah.
That's a good one. I mean, I just think, and other people can be the judge. But we try to do things the right way.
Yeah.
We really do. And I think that, I try to be honest with kids, and if they have a question about anything, talk to them. We just try to do things the right way. And I preach that a lot to the kids. Do things the right way and good things will happen to you. And I feel like a lot of our success is because we've tried to do things the right way and model the right way. One thing that I'm very, very proud of as a coach personally, I've been a head coach for 14 years and I've never had a technical foul.
Yeah.
Now, I've been close. Probably deserved one or two here and there, but I'm very proud of that. The fact that just showing the kids that you don't have to coach that way. You don't have to be that way. You can still win games without that. And so that's just one thing that I'm pretty proud of.
Yeah, I think it had been since 2009 since I'd gotten a T in a game. I picked one up this last summer. It was kind of it was in a summer camp. It was pretty silly. I pulled a Wooden. Actually, I said, goodness gracious sakes alive, you got to call that, I got a technical foul for saying goodness gracious sakes alive. Literally,
yeah.
And I would say, Lucas, I would tell you, I had said this and this leading up to it, and I deserved it. I had kept really, really quiet the whole game, and then, it was one of those deals. But I get it. I kind of the same thing where I probably deserved one along the way at some point. But I think it'd been since 2009 since I'd gotten a technical foul, so I was pretty proud of that. Pretty proud of that.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I think you're right there. We have to demonstrate how to do things the right way, et cetera, et cetera. So let's dive in. Let's get basketball nerdy here, Coach Dollinghouse. How's that sound?
That sounds good.
All right. Let's obviously you're doing things the right way. You're building up your program the right way, and a lot of that comes with just drill work. And it's not the we like drills as coaches. Kids sometimes, get bored with it. It just is what it is. But tell us a little bit. Let's just get into simple fundamentals here. What are some things? We're just going to hit the three big ones here. What's one or two of your favorite shooting drills? What's one or two of your favorite ball handling drills? One or two of your favorite passing drills? I'm just going to kind of let you roll here, Lucas. And if I feel the need to jump in, I'll try to do so politely. But the floor is yours here. So,
all right. Well, I'll start off with, I do a lot of drills. I'm not the smartest coach out there. Whenever we talk about offenses and defenses and stuff like that, we don't run sets. We don't run a lot of sets. I probably have 5 sets that I run total, and it's because I can't remember half of them. So I'm serious. You know, we expect kids to remember a lot of stuff. I don't. So whenever we talk offenses, I'm a big motion offense person because you don't have to think a lot with that. And I feel like that makes it, maybe it makes us easier to scout. I don't know. But I can't remember half the set. So, you know, at practice, I don't spend a ton of time. I probably don't spend enough time on half court offense or off half court defense. I just don't. We just do a ton of drills. And so one of my favorite drills that we do, we like to do a lot of transition stuff. So 5-man weave, 3-on-2 back. The kids love that. And I like to make everything competitive too. So whenever the kids can do like 3-on-2 stuff, they really enjoy that. So 5-man weave, 3-on-2 back. That's been a really successful drill for us. I also like to do a lot of 4-on-4-on-4 or 3-on-3-on-3 and sometimes 5-on-5-on-5. So we'll simply just break the kids up and into teams and then, you know, make it, take it. So if your team makes it, you go play offense against a new defense and we just go back and forth. And with 27 kids out for basketball, that's a nice drill just to keep things going. And then we do a continuous 3-on-2 where we set kids up on the coaching box lines and, you know, we just outlet and it's 3-on-2. And that drill gets very, very competitive because whoever gets the ball gets to stay in the drill. So we'll have kids that'll, you know, shoot it and they'll follow their shot. They'll go get their own rebound out of the net. And then they'll outlet it the other way because they want to stay in the drill. And so that gets pretty physical. I had a rebounding drill that was also pretty physical that I do. The kids love. It's called NBA drill. No babies allowed. So we didn't really do it a lot this year because I didn't want to make it hurt. And sometimes I have had a bloody nose out of it before. But essentially, you put 3 guys down around the basket. And you, as the coach, you stand at like the free throw line, you put it up, you try to miss it on purpose. And the kids just basically box each other out down around the basket. Whoever gets it off the rebound tries to put it up. And you got these other 2 guys that are hacking at him and everything else. But so that's a fun drill that we do. We do a lot of shooting drills. 5-ball shooting is probably one of my favorites. So everybody's got different names for these, but they're essentially the same drill. But basically you have 3 lines under 1 hoop and you got 2 guys on the other end. They have balls. So there's 5 balls total. You do 3-man weave down and then the 2 guys who aren't shooting the layup get the pass from the 2 guys under the basket. And then you go back the other way. So you're getting 3 shots up each time down the floor. That's just another transition drill. UConn shooting is, the kids hate it, but I love it.
that means it's a good drill.
So we start down at the opposite free throw line, and I have 3 lines, and they do 3-man weave all the way to like the 3-point line on the other end. And whoever catches it at the 3-point line, they can shoot the 3, that's worth 3 points. If they shoot a 2, it's worth 2. And then if they shoot it, they miss it, but one of the other guys catches it in the air and puts it back, it's worth 1. So I'll set the clock for 5 minutes, and they'll do this drill continuously back and forth. And I usually put a score. I think the highest we've ever gotten was like 189, which is a lot. That's a lot of balls going through the hole in 5 minutes. So that's really a fun drill. And then I'll do a 10-spot shooting. We'll do the 5 spots on the inside of the lane, and then we'll do the 5 3-point shots on the outside. And I'll say, hey, make like 10 at each spot. And so we'll do that. Pitch and fire layups, another one. The kids, they don't mind the first part of it because basically it's just 2 guys going down the court. You outlet it out and then the guy makes the layup, but on the way back I make them do defensive zigzags, and so they really don't like that part very much. But those are, you know, we incorporate a lot of passing, shooting, dribbling. We incorporate a lot of that stuff into all of our drills. And I'm not a coach who gets the kids on the line to run. Whenever I really wanted that burn job, they interviewed me and things, and the superintendent, you know, he asked me about my practice philosophy, and he brought up, I think it was Coach K, he did all his conditioning at the beginning of practice so that the kids were tired for the rest of practice, because that's how they'd be in a game. And so we do a lot of those transition drills at the beginning of practice, so it really wears the kids out. And then we do most of our conditioning is in the drills. I just don't see the point, I guess. And I'm not saying we don't ever just line up on the line and run, but I always wanted to have a purpose. And so, you know, that's conditioning happens in our transition. So,
yeah, I think that we have such limited time with the kids, and especially now today, because it just feels like kids are involved in more and more stuff. Same thing at a small school. I'm sure you know, I'm coaching girls, you're coaching guys, but you know, just in our current example, they get done with our practice at 5:30, and they might have an FBLE meeting at 6 that they got to go to till 6:45, and then they're going home and doing homework. And you know, so to me, and we're on the same wavelength here, it makes no sense to just run when you know the kids are busy, you've only got so much time with them, you've only got their attention for so long, all of those different things. That makes perfect sense. And I really like having that transition early in the practice to get them going, to make them tired. Because, yeah, and then you hit them with, you know, like some free throws or some shooting stuff, and you got to make shots when you're tired. Is that part of your practice plan as well, Lucas?
Yeah, we shoot free throws after just about every transition drill we do. I've got different things. You know, a lot of times I'll say, hey, you got to make 6 and then go get a drink, or, you know, shoot. We've got 6 baskets in our new gym, so go shoot 2 at each basket, rotate baskets. You know, we just mix it up. But our free throws, I think we set a new school record this year in free throw shooting, but that's always been important to me. We've always had good free throw shooting teams for the most part, but we shoot them a lot. Mm-hmm. To me, they're the most important shot in the game. I mean, they win and lose games, and so we shoot a lot of them. So
it's the most efficient shot. It is, absolutely. It's if you shoot 70% from the free throw line, that's 1.4 points per possession. I mean, that's a coach's dream right there. So let's talk a little defense here, Coach. Talk to us a little bit about your defensive philosophy. You know, what do you do? What do you like to do? Obviously, you adapt to your personnel, but it sounds like you had kind of a real ball hawking squad, attacking the ball, getting run outs and things like that. So tell us a little bit about your defensive philosophy and what you guys do there at Johnson Brock.
Yeah, some coaches, you know, they're like, hey, I'm just a man person, or hey, I'm just a zone person, and that's fine. But I guess I don't care for me. Like, I'm not sold on one side or the other. So it really depends on the opponent. Yep. Sometimes we'll play man, sometimes we'll play zone. Last year in 23, we played man pretty much the whole regular season. We'd throw in some zone here and there, and then we get to the state tournament, and we were undersized, and we, through scouting teams, we realized, you know, the 3 teams we played weren't great 3-point shooters. And so we played 2-3 zone the whole time in the state tournament, and it worked out for us. This year, we thought we'd play more zone, which we did at times. But then in the state tournament, where we thought we'd play a lot of zone, we ended up playing more man. So, you know, it really, to me, is all about who we're playing. And I don't care. I'll play any zone. You know, my favorite zone is probably a 1-2-2 zone, but, I don't care. We want to win the game, so yep, we're going to put ourselves in the best position. So, you know, our kids, I don't think we do anything special like at practice. We do one of my favorite defensive drills is a continuous one-on-one, where we get into groups of about 5 or 6, and we just swing the ball back and forth. It'll go to like to a wing, and then you'll play defense on that person. And then if you were on offense, you'll go to defense on the other wing. That just keeps the kids moving. But a lot of our transition drills, the five man weave, 3-on-2 back. You know, that's getting back on defense, and then, you know, getting your hands on the ball and things like that. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know that we do anything really special. Mm-hmm. We just have kids that have played a lot of basketball, and they have really good court awareness. And so they're able to get their hands on a lot of balls, and, you know, they just put themselves in a good position. I do think our help defense is pretty good. And, you know, maybe through our shell defense that we do at practice, that helps with that. But I don't know. The kids, they just – it's just a good group. Like, they just seem to know where to go and kind of where that ball's going.
Mm-hmm. A Pen and a Napkin University videos are just another way that A Pen and a Napkin can help you become a better coach. Our university video library is constantly expanding, with topics ranging from interviewing for a job to full court defense to 25 universal truths about coaching. Our university videos will help you round out your skill set as a coach and help you hone your craft. Videos are $10 a piece, with bundling options available. To order, you can DM me on Twitter, send me an email at apenandanapkin@gmail.com, or order from our website, apenandanapkin.com. Be sure to check out the A Pen and a Napkin video library. Let's talk about your staff a little bit, Coach. Let's jump in there. Your responsibilities. How do you delegate I hate to say authority, but you know, you delegate the responsibilities of the program. Especially again, your full time job is really, really busy as a principal. So I imagine there's got to be maybe even a little bit more delegation in your situation just because of your administrative responsibilities. How do you do that? You know, we've got coaches that are going to be first time head coaches this year. They're interviewing for jobs, and if I had, you know, probably towards the top of my, I don't know, I've never made a list of biggest mistakes I've made as a coach, but one of those is not delegating enough to my coaching staff. And I got better at it as I got more seasoned and experienced, as we say here on the pod. But what are some things that you do with your coaching staff to give them responsibilities and their responsibilities? How do you divvy it up?
Well, I've been very fortunate to have great assistant coaches, and my biggest, one thing that I probably wish I had more of was experience as an assistant coach, because I was only an assistant coach for 1 year. And so I remember sitting there on the sideline, like the head coach Curtis at the time, he did a great job, and he was very knowledgeable about basketball, and I just let him talk, and, you know, I'd jump in here or there when he'd ask my opinion and things. So when I actually took over as a head coach, I learned a lot from the assistant coach, because I was blessed with great mentors. You know, like I said, the first assistant I had, he had all that experience and things. So I really leaned on him a lot for advice. And so, you know, at Johnson Brock, I've had really good assistants. Ben Ideas has been with me the whole time, and he is great. He does a great job of scouting the opponent and watching that game film. You're right. As a principal, I've got a lot of duties outside of basketball, and I don't have time to watch as much film as I would like. Now, on nights and weekends, yeah, I can watch some film. But Ben does a great job of taking that film and really breaking it down. And so, you know, he's really had the opportunity to do that. And I let him at practice. He takes over the scout. So when we're talking about, hey, who are the opponent's best players? What does the opponent like to run? Ben jumps right out there on the court and, you know, leads that. And I'll throw in my two cents here and there whenever there's something maybe that I notice. But I really want him to lead that. And he's done a great job with that. And I think I hopefully give him that, you know, kind of power to do that. And so I'm very fortunate with that. I also have another assistant, Garrison Dodge, who this year has really helped with our freshman team. With 27 kids out, it's really hard. You know, gym space is limited. Your time is limited. So we've had to break apart quite a bit. And so, you know, if I'm with the varsity, you know, Garrison has done a great job with the freshmen, And then Ben kind of jumps between both as kind of that middleman. So it's been nice to have that third coach, which not every school has that. They just don't have that opportunity. Sometimes they have three coaches. But, you know, I try, you know, if the coach, you know, I tell them if there's something you want to run, if you want to run a play, you know, when you're doing JV or freshman or whatever, go ahead. Like, it's not going to hurt my feelings at all. And so it's pretty much you can be as involved as you want to be. And I try to give them duties. You know, I pretty much plan the practice, but, you know, I ask for their input. Hey, what do you think we need to work on? And then we break up drills a lot too, where like if we're working on rebounding, I'll do a rebounding drill, Garrison will do one, Ben will do one, and then we rotate the kids through. We do a lot of that stuff, and I just have a lot of trust in those guys in doing what we want to do because they're so knowledgeable. They know what we need to work on and get better at as well.
Let's finish up here on this here, Lucas. Let's talk about organizing your program from and we'll say from bottom to top instead of from top to bottom. Obviously, we're all pretty familiar of what the high school stuff looks like, and a lot of us are doing the same things at the youth level. But again, if you're going to be consistently successful, especially at a small school program, you're doing some things the right way with your youth program. So, what are some things that you've done with your youth program that has led to the success that you have consistently had, and not only with your basketball program, like I said, you could go to your football team a few years ago, that type of stuff. So, talk to us a little bit about that. Let's finish up on that here.
Well, we've had great buy-in from our community. Before I came to Johnson-Brock, they had already started this Johnson-Brock Athletic Club, which involved football, baseball, basketball, track. So that was already established before I got here. And that really starts at the third grade level. And that's more of a rec league type activity. And so, you know, the kids get experience with the different sports. And that goes really from third grade to eighth grade. We started our extreme team because we had some kids that had played some AAU ball, but AAU ball, you know, it's gotten so expensive. And there's, you know, in Johnson, we're an hour from Omaha, an hour from Lincoln. And so you add on that travel time, that made it difficult for a lot of parents. And so we wanted to take it to the next step from rec. We wanted to play more competitive games. And so we had started that extreme team to where, you know, we played in those AAU tournaments against those club teams just to go play more competitive ball. And so that really, I feel like helped lead to the success of these teams now. It's just really sustained itself now. I mean, we have, you know, parents that help coach, you know, they get the kids ready, and I tell them, what I need the kids to be good at are the fundamentals, because at the high school level, sometimes that's almost too late. If a kid can't dribble, pass, catch, shoot,
it is too late.
At the high school level, it's not going to work. And so we really, you know, stress the fundamentals at the youth level. So whenever they get up to us, they're ready to go. And so I think our community and parents have bought into that. And that's really been kind of our feeder program into our junior high and high school. At least the kids have had exposure to that basketball, and it's really led to our success. So, and before we end this, I do have some things. I think some things that I've learned that, you know, you talked about young coaches. I do have a couple of things that I think would be important. As I was in those shoes, you know, 2-19, my first year, you know, we talk about John Wooden, and these are just some little tidbits that I picked up along the way. You know, John Wooden, I've read some of his books. I thought this was interesting. He says in his books, you know, about not being the first one to call timeout.
Yep.
I thought that was interesting. And I've kind of used that with our kids as a motivator. Like, we don't want to be the first kid, or we don't want to be the first team to call a timeout, because that kind of shows a sign of weakness at times.
Exactly.
And that's what John Wooden says.
We would talk about that in practice. We would have conversations. Yeah. If we're calling timeout first, that's not good. You know, so yeah. Sorry, Coach. Go ahead.
No, and I think that's so important. Just kind of a something for coaches to think about. You know, being in this role as principal and you know, basketball coach too. I was at an event and the speaker was talking about, you know, there's no vacation from the vocation. And so whenever we talked about early on in this conversation about the hard work and the work ethic and you've got to put the time in, I think as a coach, sometimes you have to realize too, that there is no vacation from the vocation. There's always work to be done. There's always an opportunity to get better. And so I just kind of lived with that as well. You know, if you can predict it, you can prevent it. I've used that a lot with our kids. And with our coaches too, that, you know, if we can predict that, you know, this may not be a great situation to put our kids into, you know, if we can predict it, we can probably prevent something from happening. Or if we predict that a team's going to run something on us, let's try and prevent that from happening. And I think sometimes, you know, coaching is hard. You can put five kids on the floor at one time. And, you know, your sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth guy, sometimes, you know, they want to be in. They want to be one of those first five. And I picked up this quote last summer. It was, the truth is rarely popular. Sometimes you have to tell kids the truth. Sometimes you have to let them know, you know, hey, here's what I need you to do. Here's what I need you to work on. And that's not always popular because the truth is hard. The truth is hard to hear sometimes. Yeah. And so I think that's important. And I also ask parents, where we have a parent meeting at the beginning of the year too, and I ask kids this too, you know, would you rather be the best player on a team that doesn't win a game, or would you rather be a role player on a team that wins a state championship? And I think that's an important perspective, and just to get buy-in to your program. And I think that, you know, we've had a lot of success with that. You know, just that mindset that we don't have any superstar players on our team. We just have a group of guys who play really well together and mm-hmm. they play for each other. And the last thing I've got is when I was, you know, back in my classroom days, you know, I was teaching a class and I think this is important, especially for coaches who coach their own kids. And even parents too. I was teaching a class at the end of the year. We had senior shout outs where we would record the seniors and we would say, hey, why don't you tell us something you're thankful for? And so we get to this one kid and he said, you know, I'm going to thank my parents. And I said, all right, that sounds good. And so he gets on the camera and he says, I want to thank my mom for cooking all the meals throughout my high school career. Her food was good. But I want to thank my dad for telling me all the things I did wrong in all the games I played. And I thought, how powerful is that? That throughout his career of sports, like we hounded on the negative, and that was his memory. And I felt so bad for that. And so it's tough coaching your own kids, and it's tough coaching anybody else's kids. But I think we need to put in perspective what sports are. And it's just an opportunity for kids to have some fun. And we just need to kind of keep that in perspective sometimes. And so that's always stuck with me that, you know, as a coach, you want to do it for the right reasons. At the end of the day, you want the kids to have fun. Winning is fun. The journey to win is fun. But you just want to keep that in perspective. So.
Some very wise words, Coach Dollinghouse. That's some really, really good stuff there. A great place to end our podcast here today. Coach, if folks want to know more about you, want to know more about Johnson Brock and the school or the athletic programs, how can they find that out?
Call me, text me, email me. I'm an open book, so I mean I could probably talk to you for days about things. Whatever they want. I mean, I'm on the school website, so my email address is on there. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, or I guess it's X now. But I'm willing to talk anytime. So just give me a call.
Absolutely, awesome stuff, Coach. I hope you've enjoyed your run here on a pen and a napkin.
Yeah, it's been great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Want to thank you for your time. I'm going to take a minute here, sign off here, and just hold the line here for a second. Again, Lucas Dollinghouse, head boys basketball coach at Johnson Brock High School here in Nebraska. Want to thank him for his time here today. Want to thank Cosac Chiropractic for being the founding sponsor of the pod. Again, if you're in need of chiropractic services, give Dr. Kevin or Dr. Heidi a call, 402-964-0300. Follow us on Twitter. I'm still going to call it Twitter. I'm not going to call it X. I'm all old school. So Fenway Park and Wrigley Field are still the two best places to watch a baseball game. All right. So I'm old school. Follow us on Twitter at A Pen and a Napkin. Download, rate, review this podcast. Give us 5 stars. Questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me at penandanapkin@gmail.com. Go check out apenandanapkin.com, and we'll roll from there. Really a great conversation here with Lucas Dollinghouse, the head boys basketball coach at Johnson Brock. He does a great job here at his program, and you can tell why. So, coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.